Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Ethan, and I'm not Gen X, but listening and watching Gen X grown up makes me feel like I am. If you want the same experience I've had, consider becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/patreon.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown Up Podcast, listener to this backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown Up Podcast. I'm John. Joining me, as always, is George.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
And you know that Mo is here.
Hey, everybody.
The Backtrack is, as you know, the episode where we pick a single nostalgic topic and dig in deep. And we might not have known it at the time, but as Generation X kids, we were among the last to enjoy a childhood that gave us a deep sense of independence and autonomy. Everything from proliferation of technology to changes in media and politics have forever changed that for modern generations. But in this Backtrack, we will be remembering and discussing the singular experience of growing up as a Gen X kid. And this is a topic which, again, was suggested by one of our fourth listeners and, by the way, Patreon supporter, Marcus. I think a few weeks or months back, maybe, George, you were having a little roundtable, like soliciting ideas, and we got a lot out of that. Yeah. And this is one that Marcus suggested. It's almost like it's a cornerstone of the Gen X experience, and now we're going to focus on this very topic. Before we get into that, though, it's time for some fourth listener email. The fourth listener this time around is Scott. Scott wrote in about our bulletin board system Backtrack. In fact, Ooh. The rewind we did where we kind of brought that back on our feed.
I was going to say, that's an old episode.
That's a really old episode. You're right.
That's a deep cut.
Yep. The subject line of Scott's email was "Internet killed the BBS star." He says, "Surprisingly enough, BBSs may be one of the biggest things that shaped my entire life. I was born at the tail end of Gen X, and in 92 or 93, my family bought an external 2400 baud modem."
Ooh, 2400.
Yeah. "I discovered the world of BBSs shortly thereafter. During that time, I learned that most of the people using and or running the same BBSs I frequented were also in high school, and they decided to have weekly meetups and even called themselves the Dead Hackers Society."
Wow. That's 90s creativity for you right there.
Right. I know. Yeah. I'm sure Robin Williams' attorneys will be getting in touch.
Yeah.
He says, "I eventually attended their meetups and made fast friends, and that's those friendships persist today."
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, right? "I haven't seen anyone I went to high school with in decades, but I still see and keep in touch with my DHS buddies. My career path was even defined by those people or people who were friends of my friends." That's cool. It was a different kind of community, bulletin boards. It was we were the first to kind of reach out and have access to people in that way in real time chat. And I can see it forming long lasting friendships. Yeah,
absolutely.
He winds up his email saying, "I have a lot of great memories wrapped up on the subject matter you picked. Thanks for letting me relive them again. Scott."
That's cool.
Very cool. Nice. You're very welcome, Scott. And thank you for writing in. We love it every time the fourth listener writes in. If you would like your email featured here on the show, it's so easy. Just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We read every single one and most of them, just like Scott's. Eventually, we'll make it to the show. Okay, we get back from the break. It's time to jump into our discussion about Gen X childhood autonomy. Be right back. Over the past few weeks, we've been trying out Factor Meals and their meals that come straight to your door. They deliver them to you in the mail. They drop on the front door in this freezer pack. And it's a great way to eat stress-free. And this spring, you can get delicious, ready-to-eat meals. They're fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved. And here's the cool thing, as we've all found out. You throw them in the microwave for 2 minutes, and they're ready to eat and not even requiring cleanup.
And if you can't find something on their menu that you like, then you're just way too picky, mm-hmm. because they have over 35 options. Mm. You know, they have things like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, Veggie, and we even tried the vegetarian one, which was really good.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just the regular meals, but they've also got all these add-on packs, which I really love. These are right. things like, you know, breakfast or on-the-go lunches or little snacks, even like beverages that want to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So really, I mean, like they say on their site, what are you waiting for? And they're not kidding. You can get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals by heading over to Factor.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Are you looking for good gourmet meals? Try the meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking.
We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for lowest carbon footprint meals.
So head to factormeals.com/GenX50 and use code GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code GenX50 at factormeals.com/GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Be sure to subscribe to or follow Gen X Grown Up wherever you listen. And while you're there, rate and review the show, too. It helps more than you know.
With more single-parent families and families with both mom and dad working, the time between school's out for kids and work's over for parents is usually 2 or 3 hours. Some parents don't want or can't afford to put their child in an after-school daycare center. So these latchkey children wait home alone for mom and dad. If you're in this situation, both you and your children will feel more secure by reviewing tips on staying safe.
As we prepared to talk about this specific topic and focus a backtrack on it, I think it was you, Mo, during our planning stages who said, didn't we already talk about this on an episode?
I could have swore we did.
And, you know, I think it's because we kind of always talk about this. You know, part of the bedrock of being a Gen Xer, having that childhood in the, you know, 70s, 80s, early 90s, whenever it was, it was based on this kind of sense of independence and autonomy that we were able to have.
Oh, hold on.
What happened? What did I miss?
You used that word like 4 times now.
What word?
Autonomy.
Oh.
That is way too highbrow for our podcast.
SAT
There's
word?
No way that we should be using a 7-syllable word like autonomy to describe anything that happened in our childhood.
Okay, so what should we just say? Self-reliance?
No, that's still, for our childhood, it's like abandonment is the best word we should probably use.
Okay, so we're talking about independence and abandonment. Fair enough. Okay.
All right.
I can live with that. Yeah. So a lot of it kind of hinges around, I think, can be spawned out of the concept that because we were what they coined latchkey kids.
Yeah.
And what that really meant was that because single parent households were on the rise, or both parents working were on the rise, it was not uncommon for us, maybe the first generation ever, to very often come home and nobody else was home. We had a key, we let ourselves in, and we had to fend for ourselves.
I think, too, it depended upon where you lived and what type of community. So you guys may have had the latchkey thing where you came home, let yourself in, you were by yourself for a couple hours until your parent or parents came home. I didn't have that. My experience was more as soon as school ended at 3 o'clock, let's say, and I still had 2 hours to kill before a parent would pick me up. Mine was more centered around activities that would go on until my parent would pick me up. So maybe a sports practice or going to the local comic book shop with my friends, that kind of a thing. So I didn't have the latchkey part of it. The only thing that kind of came close for me was that, and I'm going to get a lot of ribbing. I can feel it coming already.
Uh-oh. Well, let's get ready. Let's get ready, John.
I'm prepared.
Yeah, I'm prepared.
My
okay.
school was a little private school. It only had like 4 classrooms in it. And there was a Jerry's restaurant situated right next to the back part of the playground up on a hill. And my mother would drop me off at the Jerry's restaurant. I got dropped off there so often. I might have mentioned this before, that they knew my order before I ever walked in. So as soon as I opened the door, the order was placed and it was at my table like within 30 seconds or something like that. So I would stay in the restaurant until it was time to go to school, which was usually an hour after my mother would drop me off.
Okay.
That's as close as I got to a latchkey.
So you were dropped off at a restaurant before school to have your morning feast.
I did. And then, yes, I know pork I'm going to hear about it in the emails. I did have pork chops in the lunchbox during lunch.
Yeah, that's a standard.
I was a well-fed child.
But so I want to dive into something that you said, though, that I find very interesting. Unlike us and many, many Gen Xers, you didn't go home and spend that time at home by yourself. Mm-mm. You entertained yourself out away from home until your parents got home.
Yeah. Okay. It was, I didn't go home until my parents picked me up from whatever location I was at. Mm,
okay. Gotcha.
I did a lot of extracurricular activities. So oftentimes, like I said, it was going to baseball practice or basketball practice or football practice or something along those lines. And on the days when it wasn't that, which was usually New Comic Book Day, my friend and I would walk from the little private school about a half a mile to a mile up to a comic book shop that was in the general area.
Okay.
That's probably the closest latchkey thing that I had where my parents didn't have any control over what was going on. And oddly enough, they never seemed concerned about it. Like it wasn't like a, you know, carry your pocket knife and your flashlight and don't talk to straight. I never got any of those talks. It was just
here's
like,
your
okay,
bear mace. You'll need this.
Where are you going to be? We'll pick you up at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Mode? I mean, did you have the key on a necklace string around your neck or?
You better believe it.
And you grew up very urban. You were downtown Manhattan, right?
Oh, yeah. And now I had three older brothers, so I wasn't home that long. Usually I was only home for like maybe an hour or so until my brothers got out of school. But but up until that point, though, like I walked home, I unlocked my door, went in there, made sure the door was locked behind me.
How old were you? What grade?
Third grade.
Oh, wow. Was that like 8, 9?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, something thereabouts. And so, yeah, I would just go home and just and have to hang out. And, you know, yeah, I was supposed to do my homework, but yeah, that never happened.
No.
But
that was a theory. What's the point of being alone if you got to do homework? That's some bullshit.
Yeah, that was a theory. But yeah, then my brothers would come home. But still, though, yeah, but it was pretty often. And I mean, there'd be a few times when they had late things where I'd be home until 5, 6 o'clock by myself. Mm-hmm. It was just normal.
We talked on our last Backtrack. We were speaking about those 80s detective shows and how, you know, the TV was a babysitter. And often that's how we would kill time when we got home. I'm curious. I mean, I know what I did and I'll talk about it in a second. What did you do, Mo? Now, George, we know what you did. You were in the comic book store or the shops or downtown or did sports practice and stuff. When you were home by yourself waiting for other people to get home, like that's where that independence starts to percolate.
Oh, sure.
You're on your own. Nobody, you're no, answerable to nobody unless you break something they find out later. You can do whatever you want. So how did you fill that time when you were first the latchkey kid?
Yeah, when I was super young, it was mostly reading books, comic books. Yeah, I was totally a nerd. Books, comic books, you know,
not
that kind
nerd
of thing.
Enough to do your homework though.
No.
I tried to watch a little TV, but couldn't watch too much because if the TV was hot when my dad got home, he got in trouble. So
because he could check the temperature on the CRT.
Detective? It's warm. They're nearby. Warm.
Somebody was here recently.
Somebody laid in my bed.
Exactly. But that's mostly, and then as I got older, then I got into like, you know, D&D and all the other nerd things. And that really, I mean, that filled up a lot of time, but it was I never regretted it. I always had fun.
It filled it up. Yeah. Yeah. My latchkey experience was, we have like all the spectrum covered, right? So Mo, you were very downtown. You were in the biggest city on the planet. And George, you were in town, but you weren't, you know, in the woods. I lived in the woods. So, and both of my parents worked. I wasn't a child of divorce. Both my parents were still together and were together all the way up until my dad passed away. But they both worked long hours and they worked 30 or 40 minutes from home or further. Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, George, you get off at 3. I would ride the bus home, which was only, you know, about a 30-minute drive after, you know, school is out. And then I would get dropped off at the end of this long, long gravel road. So I had to walk this entire, maybe it was a half mile. Felt like forever when you're a kid and you want to get
uphill
home.
Uphill both
ways. I want to play. Uphill
felt like
both
you were
ways.
In the movie Stand By Me. You're going to see the dead body.
Yeah, yeah, kind of. But then, yeah, I had a key. I think actually the key was left outside. We had under a planter or something. I didn't carry it with me because I would lose it. But I loved that period of time. In fact, I hated when usually my mom got home first. My dad worked longer hours. But I mean, I loved my mom and to see her, but I hated the end of that independent time because during that time I was running around the house and looking in places that I shouldn't be looking. It was a great time to look for Christmas presents. If it's the holiday time, you know, it's, but you have the run of the house. If I want to watch the TV, nobody checked the temperature of my TV. It was okay. But if I wanted to watch TV too loud, if I wanted to, you know, all that was fine. Or, but when I got Atari later, I could play Atari and nobody was judging, you know, how long I was playing. And I would always start my homework. So then when somebody got home, they would see I was working on it. Well, they didn't know I started it when I first got home and then left it alone for 2 hours. But, you know, eventually I got around to the homework, but not during my independent time. So.
Well, that's what I think is pretty cool about the independent time, though. It's like I had to figure out how to fill it. You know, there wasn't anybody telling me, like, you know, I didn't have like a list of things I was supposed to do when I got home or something like that. You know, I was home and, you know, maybe my mom would say, straighten up your room or something like that. You know, I got home. But
yeah, before I get home, have this done. Yeah. I would have a chore maybe. Yeah,
exactly. That might happen. But other than that, though, I had to figure it out. You know, I had to figure out how to occupy myself, which is something that I think is tougher for kids these days. I don't think they have that opportunity.
There's so many organized play dates and structured time and what you're going to do. And we'll get into more of that a little bit later in the show. But one of the biggest and maybe most impactful is how communication has changed between when we were growing up and now. And we're going to jump into that right after this break. Stick around.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
Who put the filling in the bundt cake?
Ah. Who put the swirl in the streusel swirl?
Who put the in the macaroon?
Who put the yum in the cinnamon?
Only Pillsbury has bundt brand and streusel swirl cake mixes with luscious fillings that bake right in.
Who takes the cake for fillings? That tastes great. The freshest ideas are baking at Pillsbury.
How many of you guys had to carry change in their pockets to make phone calls?
Yep.
You know, I always had to have, well, when I was really young, it was a dime, then a little bit later it became a quarter, but I always had to have that because I never knew if I had to call home for some reason.
For an emergency.
And for an emergency.
Yeah, I mean, I never used it. I probably still have that same quarter from back then.
Yep.
There's no printing on it anymore. It's rubbed completely smooth like a slug.
I was never going to call them.
Mm-hmm. But that was the thing, though. It's like we had to, I mean, there wasn't the instantaneous guaranteed communication that we have today with, with everybody, pretty much. Something for me was if I wanted to do something after school that was out of normal, which normal for me was go straight home. So anything that was not go straight home, I had these series of numbers I had to call. I had to call my mom's job. I had to call my dad's job. And if I couldn't get in touch with anybody, I went home.
Wow.
You couldn't do it.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Because nobody would know that you're...
Nobody would know where I was.
Off band. Right. Got it.
But these days, that just doesn't happen. It's kind of weird. I mean, I don't know. How about you, George? What did you have?
For me, I didn't have to stay in contact with them at all because I was a part of expected activities that were more than just myself. Like I said, you know, I was going to a sports practice or a game, or I was going with my friend to the comic book shop, and that had all been vetted and approved ahead of time. I didn't have to start worried really about communications until I turned 15 and 16 and got a car.
Really?
Then one accident later, now I got to find a goddamn payphone all the time. I had a really bad accident. My end of my junior year in high school, ripped a car in half, broke my neck, all this kind of crazy.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah. What? It was horrible. Like, John, you had that Pontiac Firebird, right? Mine was a Camaro, right? The Camaro Z28. Berlin 80 Coupe, one of the, you know, ones that they didn't make a lot of models of.
Oh, Camaro Berlinetta. Yeah, I know well.
And so we had it as a lease, too.
Oh, jeez. Your parents, did you get pork chops after that?
Well, yeah. So it turned out it was a manufacturer's defect that caused the accident. It wasn't my fault. There was no other cars involved, thank God.
Okay.
But that raised their alarms. Now they're very worried about
alarms,
you.
So from then on.
Anything could happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you break your neck and whatnot.
Yeah, I would think.
Parents start to get a little.
Put the fear of God into parents. They're like, oh, anything. Yeah. I hadn't thought about these terrible things that could happen, right?
Yeah.
That's. Why do you think it is? I mean, obviously communication is so much easier these days. Like I remember I was excited to get my daughter when she was very young, a cell phone. Well, she was tickled to death to have a cell phone because I can play games and goof off. I was excited to know that, well, now I know where she is because I know she's not going to let go of that cell phone and she's going to hold on to it for dear life. So wherever she is, I could track her. I know where she is. But do you think it's because it's possible now that parents are so aggressive about micromanaging where you are? What is it that makes communication so much more important to modern parents?
For me, there's a segment that we're going to do in a little while that I think applies to why. I think the devices make the how a lot easier.
Certainly. Yeah.
I think there's a different reason for why versus how.
It's not just that it's available. No.
Exactly. Okay. Like, yeah. I mean, we've had different forms of communication available to us. Like we talked about the quarter in the pocket with the payphone. There were billions of payphones everywhere. Yeah, so it wasn't like they were hard to find.
That's a fair point. Yeah.
Yes,
sure. Yeah. Or use a friend's phone or something like that. Well, I remember, so twofold for me, and it kind of straddles the two worlds that George, you and Mo mentioned, is I also wasn't required to stay in constant contact necessarily, unless I was deviating from the plan, right? I'm supposed to be at this place. If I'm going to be somewhere else, you better let somebody know.
Right.
Because as soon as you're not where you're supposed to be, that's when people start panicking, right?
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
But then, you know, as I got a little older, as you said, you know, now I didn't wreck a Berlinetta, but I certainly had my share of vehicle problems. It was mostly because I drove piece of crap vehicles, which was just because we didn't have a lot of money. We had piece of crap vehicles. I'd break down. But the policy was once I started driving, even then, now I have a car, right? I have an 8-ton rocket that I can take anywhere on the planet. All I had to do was either be home by 10 or the phone needs to ring before the strike at 10 to let me know why you're not home.
Okay.
That was fair. The deal.
That's cool.
And again, I think that's just, you're expected to be home by this time. If you're not, it wasn't like, where the hell are you? As long as I said, hey, we're going to see a movie. It's not going to get out till 10:30, just so you know. They'd be like, cool, now we know. But otherwise, I should be in the door when the clock strikes 10 or my dad's going to get his boot off and start swinging.
Well, I think there was a little bit of fear involved in that rule as well, right? Because you had a car, like you said, you could drive it anywhere in the world. There was an extra layer of fear that would kick in for parents then that the child isn't just going to be around the neighborhood or their friend's house or anything where that's very familiar. They could literally be in another state and the parent would know it if they didn't get the communication.
Yeah. So how many times have you guys heard this line for your parents? Call me when you get there.
I use that myself.
Yeah, exactly. That was the thing too. It's like, you know, oh, I'm going to a friend's house. You know, okay, well, call me when you get there. And then I call, I'm here. That was like the entire conversation.
And that was it.
Yeah,
that was
I'm here, click.
You could have been anywhere. It's I called and said I'm somewhere.
That was the times when you would get creative with the collect calls too, if you had to use those.
Oh, right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
Who's making this call? Mr. I'm already home or whatever.
Yeah, this is a collect call from Joe. I'm at Bill's house.
Right.
I decline. Okay, we're all good.
Okay.
Wait, we've been talking about how we can stay in touch with one another, but there's another key element of communication that I think really has shifted a lot. And it's how media proliferates. You know, everything that's bad news is out there. The stranger danger really started percolating at the tail end of our childhood.
Thanks, Ted Turner.
Yeah. Yeah. The 24-hour news cycle. Thanks, Ted.
Yeah. Yeah. Kidding. Jerk. Yeah, 24-hour news cycle.
Ruined our childhood.
I've seen studies before, and I think I believe this is true, that the same bad things happened when we were kids as are happening now. It's just that now every single one of them has a place to be reported, and there's going to be a documentary about it, and we're going to dig deep on this guy, this one pervert who did something odd.
Right.
That puts such a throttle on childhoods after ours, because I think, yes, our parents cared about us, but they weren't paranoid about us. Yeah. They're like, look, I raised a little micro human. He kind of has some good judgment and he came home alive yesterday. I expect he will again tomorrow and nothing's really changed. We live in the same place, all that kind of thing. What do you think about how that has impacted, how different it would have been for us?
For me, again, it's going to be in that final segment later
on. A bit later, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I think what you're talking about there too is how things have changed as well. There's an element to that question.
Certainly. Yep.
And I think for us as Gen Xers, that change happened during our childhood years. I think a lot of the media that you're talking about really became widespread and more prolific as we grew older. Now, I'm the younger of the three of us. So, you know, I hit my 18 years at 89. Mm-hmm. So
you probably saw more of that.
The internet thing wasn't really quite there yet, you know, popular wise, but certainly cable was there.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah. True.
Yeah.
And you good point. You don't bring up John is like, when I used to teach karate, we started teaching it the whole stranger danger thing. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing some research on it and I was like, wait a minute. Do you know how many kids actually get abducted by strangers in the United States?
Yeah. Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's really low number. It's like, there was like last year there was like 150 total in the United States.
Really?
Yeah. Like I'm talking total.
Like I think I'm pretty savvy about this kind of stuff. And that's a shockingly low number to me.
Yeah. Everyone thinks it's like millions.
My general feeling is that must be thousands and thousands. But
well,
really
it depends on what you classify as a stranger, right? That's how they can build that statistic. So a stranger is somebody that you've not never family. Met before at
totally
all.
Totally unknown, right? Totally right. unknown.
But
right.
is that really what somebody would consider a stranger? Like, okay, I know Mr. Whipple down the store. He's not a stranger. But if he abducts me, you know, he's not really a family member, right. but we kind of know him.
Right. Looking at that, I mean, you look at things like if you look at how many kids get abducted by family, by other friends of family, but then the number's much higher.
Sure.
Right.
I mean, it's a horrible statistic, but they had like 1,700 kids died last year from their parents.
You know, this wasn't supposed to be a depressing podcast.
Okay. So
we're going down morbid statistics for
digging down a rabbit hole. Right.
My point is that, you're right. I mean, I think that what it comes down to is that I think our parents at the time was probably more focused on the right things to keep us safe. Like my parents, my dad, he taught me early. Trust your instincts. If something doesn't feel right, get out of there.
We're treading into territory of that last segment again.
Okay. So, all right. Well,
it's
for George
all
to
part
talk
of
about
the
segment.
Same discussion. So it's hard to keep them separate.
Yeah, compartmentalized. Well, so to turn this thing up on an upbeat after the depressing statistics, when we get back from the break, all of this has kind of culminated in how that independence manifested itself. Yep. And we're talking about how we enjoy playing outside all on our own. And we're going to talk about that when we get right back.
I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty podcast.
Each episode of Gen X Grown Up has show notes loaded with links where you can learn more about our topics. And there's even more to see and hear over at genxgrownup.com.
Poochie is here.
Good night, girl.
Look at my heartthrob box. Got a heartthrob book and a picture frame.
You got his picture.
You're so lucky.
It wasn't luck. It was Poochie. Now I need a lock of his hair.
How will you get that?
Yeah, how will you get that?
Lights out, girls.
Does Poochie know his barber?
My heartthrob box comes with everything you see here. Poochie, new by Mattel.
I think I've already alluded to it enough. My favorite thing to do with my childhood was playing. I love playing sports. I love playing with my friends. And the majority of my play took place outside of the home. Later on, we got the Atari 2600. And so some of that shifted inside, but we still played outside almost all the time. Whether it was a school week or a summertime, winter break, didn't matter. We were playing outside either by ourselves or with our friends. You know, it just depended on who was available, what was going on, what the plans were. And I think that most Gen Xers probably grew up with some of the same playing outside rules. For us, one of the ones that most of the kids in my neighborhood had was you needed to stay on your street. We had like this little subdivision kind of a thing that wasn't really a subdivision, but kind of was the beginnings of what should have been a subdivision. And there were four roads off of the main road that all dead ended off of the main road. And each road had its own set of duplexes. So for us, because most of the kids happened to live on the same road that I did, the rule was for all our parents, you guys can go outside and do whatever you want. You have to stay on our street. Mm-hmm. I think that was because it was easy visually to see us. Because the street was only a few hundred yards long, and it was easy verbally for them to holler at
George. Screaming distance.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that was something that was probably common for you two as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, for me, it absolutely was, because, you know, I lived on, you know, I grew up in New York, and the street I lived on, I mean, you know how a standard New York City block, right? But the one I lived on, because of the way our apartment complex
long was, and narrow. And,
but the way our apartment complex was laid out, we actually crossed two streets. Like, two streets were actually closed off because of our So our street, so our thing is like a 1x3 block. And that was a rule. I can't cross the street. That was like the rule.
Had to stay on your block.
Got
to
stay on the block. And as long as I did that, we were fine.
You people and your concepts of subdivisions and blocks. So I grew up in the woods.
Mr. Hick over here. You have to stay within the tree line.
Okay. Don't laugh. It's almost like that. First, I'll say this is probably my favorite topic of this podcast to talk about, because while I grew up to be a digital, sedentary, electronic, inside the house nerd, even though I didn't do organized sports, playing outside was the thing to do. Probably up until a little post Atari. Atari was like the thing when you got tired, you would go home. Even then, outside play with my couple of friends in my rural area, loved it. Now, as I said, we didn't have a block to stay within. So we really didn't have any hard and fast rules, because I think probably parents out where I lived in a very rural area, again, the paved road was a half a mile from my house, right? So it was gravel. I think they figured, just let him go. He's going to get tired well before he gets anywhere that's dangerous. He's going to get sick of that and want to come back for a snack, right? And they're not too wrong, but because of that, I was able to, I don't even say game the system. There was no system, right? It was go outside, you know, make sure you're back by X or whatever, if that even was said.
Right.
But I would go out with, I had one friend who lived right across the street from me. So we both lived this very rural thing. We're the exact same age. And we would just wander heaven knows where, you know, climbing between barbed wire fences. Never been out this field. Let's see what's out here. Right. Oh, there's some cows. Oh, look, there's an old abandoned house. Let's go in and break a window or something. Oh my God, we're deviants. That was the worst kind of thing we would do. Even with no structured rules about don't do this, be here, don't be there. Coming out of that origin of, you know, we're kind of a little on our own. We're not being micromanaged. We're not required to absolutely, you know, be tethered to, you know, your mom's apron string all day long, meant that we had, like you said, Mo, if something feels weird, get out of there, right? Mm-hmm. We had that, Gen X kids had that kind of innate sense of like, kind of feels like I've been out a long time. Maybe I ought to get home. Yeah. We have that spidey sense of like, oh, wow, it's a little later than usual. I bet dad's getting upset. Maybe I should be making my way back. So we had a wide open kind of thing. And, you know, and one of the things that I know a lot of people talk about is be home before the streetlights are on. We didn't have streetlights out where I was.
So I was going to bring that topic up. You know, for us, and I'm sure Mo had something similar living in the city, streetlights come on, your butt better be in the door or at least in the yard so that you could, you know, be seen and be called to dinner, because that was going to happen around that same time. And it wasn't, for my parents, it wasn't so much that, oh, we don't want him out at night because scary things happen at night. For my parents, it was, this was a timing mechanism to keep the structure of the day intact. So streetlights coming on meant it was time to have dinner, which meant right after that was time to take a shower, which meant right after that was doing your homework, which meant right after that was going to bed.
It's the routine, right?
Yeah, a routine.
You knew your structure.
Started with those streetlights, which were the first indicator.
We had a similar thing growing up. It was the same streetlights when they came on, although we had to be in front of our building if the streetlights came on. So we were like immediately available. So similar to your yard. But one thing you mentioned, John, which is like when you had like a friend that you hung out with, you went and I keep thinking back to that thing. Remember the movie Stand By Me?
Oh, yeah. Of course. This is the second reference to Stand By Me in the same show.
Where the kids are walking down the tracks and stuff.
Yeah.
I remember that because I had the same group of friends in my neighborhood. You're with them, especially in the summer, hours. Every single day. You eventually kind of run out of stuff to do sometimes. Yeah, I mean, you create it, but you know what I mean? Like, you've done this again, done this again. So you wind up talking about just the weirdest stuff. You know, just have these bizarre conversations.
I think, as you got a little older, like the kids in that movie did, right?
Yeah. Like who could Mickey Mouse beats, you know, blah, 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 or whatever. You know, I mean, we just had like these weird, just we thought deep conversations. But it was also because, again, we did everything. Like, oh, you want to do this? I don't feel like doing that today.
See, that is exactly what unstructured time did for us. us. Mm-hmm. You know, we were forced to entertain ourselves. We weren't, again, tethered to our parents or had to report to them constantly. When you ran out of the crazy things that they didn't want you to do in the first place, you actually got tired, sat down, and you talked with each other. You communicated, whether it's crazy stuff, like you said, who would win, Mickey Mouse versus the Hulk or whatever, or whether it's like, man, so, you know, how do you feel about what's going on in school in this weird situation? You actually talk to people. And that's another skill we developed because of that wonderful unstructured time.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing that we're kind of omitting here. So we haven't really talked about the type of play, which we don't necessarily need to do because I think it's pretty self-apparent. You know, you'd play when you were a little kid, you play cowboys and Indians or cops and robbers or something along those lines. Maybe army where you throw rocks at each other that were hand grenades and you try to smack the kid in the face with it.
You need a stick just the right shape to look like a gun, and that's a gun.
Exactly, right? You would get your Fisher Price or Tonka toy figures and you would dig trenches in your yard and pour the water hose in there to make rivers and scenes and reenact things that you might have seen in a TV show or a movie or something. Yep. But there was one thing, I don't know, Mo may not have gotten to experience this, but I'm going to bet that John might have. I know I definitely did. Mm. There's something that sparked my memory when you talked about those conversations that you would have, right? Yeah. Mighty Mouse beat, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Is where you had those conversations. For us, we built our own forts. Sometimes they were in the woods. Sometimes it was in a side yard nailed to a tree with whatever driftwood or plywood we could find somewhere. And building those forts, while we were outside of our house, those became our sanctuaries, our safe zones for me and my three or four friends. Mm. And that's where we would have those kind of deep, what we thought were deep, intimate conversations. John, Mo, did either of you guys do that kind of, you know, have that special place?
Yeah, well, we'll start with Mo, because did you even have a place to have a fort?
Where were you? Really? No, that's not a whole fort thing, but let's go to John.
I don't think I ever actually built an official fort, but certainly we had little cubbyhole places, like a place in the woods where a bunch of trees had fallen and we're like, this is a great natural place. And because you're out there, again, unstructured, you're like, well, let's pretend this post-apocalyptic, right? Because we all had a fear of a nuclear winter, right? It's post-apocalyptic and these trees were knocked down by the apocalypse and we're the last two people, you know, in this area and we're trying to set up camp and, oh, we're going to have to find a bunch of pine cones. And so we would turn into play. And then once again, you got tired of that. Mm-hmm. Now you're sitting around goofing off, you know, drinking your Capri Sun. At that point, you're like, yeah, so I've been meaning to ask you, what do you think about, right? And then you get into those kind of philosophical things.
Did your parents actually literally throw you out of the house in the summer? Mine did. I don't know if you guys did, but my dad, because I had three older brothers, so he'd be like, all right, guys, out of the house.
Before George answers, I'm going to predict that George's parents were always throwing him out of the house well after he was an adult.
Wow.
It's just a theory. You can correct me. Am I wrong?
It's a cruel theory. Damn.
But am I wrong?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
But not because of the reasons why you think.
All right.
My father never threw me out of the house because, frankly, he was just always away from the house. Mm. So he was running that grocery store or, you know, not to disparage his memory, getting drunk at a bar somewhere. But my mother, she definitely didn't throw me out of the house, but she was okay with me leaving. My mother was, you know, she was much more possessive of me and wanted to make sure I had what I needed, take care of me. You know, all the old jokes that we've made time and time again in these podcasts. John was even there one night when we had the whole Star Trek club over at my house and my mother made tacos for everybody.
Made tacos.
And
just all of a sudden, here they appear.
Wow.
And next thing you know, I'm sitting in the chair, because I'm like, I'm going to be a good host, let everybody go get their tacos. Here comes my mother in the living room, had already made my tacos.
Has made his tacos. Here, George, I have yours just the way you like them. And I kissed each one twice.
Right? Yep. So neither of my parents threw me out of the house, but I was certainly allowed to go outside. Mm-hmm. I don't even know that I can say I was encouraged to leave the house.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, my dad was like, it was like a Saturday and it was a nice day outside. After breakfast, he'd be like, all right, bye. Like,
get the hell out. Like,
yeah. I don't want to see, he says, I don't expect to see you until dinner.
Yeah. I've certainly heard that as kind of a stereotype that apparently is not just a stereotype. It's a thing that a lot of parents said, okay, I don't want to see you back in the house until X, right? You should be out playing.
Right.
And which again, I think George is going to play into a discussion you have in the next segment of the show. Yep. I was not forced or even encouraged to go out But I think it was expected. Like, there's only so much you can do in the house because I was an only child. I didn't have any siblings at all. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I can, what board game I'm going to play by myself or whatever. Everything there is to do isn't in my house that isn't a video game that came along later, really.
Yeah. Right.
If I want to do something interactive or the things that really stimulated my mind or find somebody. And we probably, you talked about a group of friends. We probably all had that two or even one like super tight friend. Like, sure. No matter what, it wasn't, hey, I wonder if he can come out and play. I'm like, I know he's waiting for me to come out and play because I'm waiting on him to come out and play. And we're always, you know, you go and knock on the door and it's not like, do you want to come out? Like, he's shutting the door behind him. Yeah, where are we going? It wasn't even, do you want
to
go?
That might be a good way to end this segment to get it ready for the next one is,
okay,
can you remember the name of that friend? I'm not talking about high school buddy. I'm talking about the one that you, that was that buddy that you went outside with in elementary and maybe up to middle school, that
your
was
your
neighborhood
friend?
Guy yep. that you hung out yep. with the most.
Okay. So I remember mine. Mo, think about it. George, fourth listener, during this break, you think about who was your number one Gen X hangout buddy. We're going to remember ours when we get right back.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dean Archipotis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
And yes, Bigfoot chasers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dino Tripodis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at WhiskeyBusinessPod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking Join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at GenXGrownUp.com/Patreon.
On the next After School special...
Is something wrong?
Ryan can't read or write.
What are the words... I mean, what do you see? You know, I can't even tell time.
And nobody understands his problem.
You read that sign. Why?
For Brian, everything's backwards. The riddle of dyslexia.
All right. You've had a few minutes to think about it. We were talking about who was that number one or one or two great hangout buddies.
That best friend.
Mo, do you remember?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Who was it?
That was actually pretty easy. It was Ronnie Rojas.
Ronnie Rojas.
Yep.
Yeah. He lived on the same block, I guess, because you can't cross the street, right?
Well, he lived actually, I had to cross the street to get to his house, but that was the exception. He was the exception. If I was going to Ronnie's house, it was okay. But yeah, we went to the same school. We were through probably second grade, third grade from before school.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, definitely that was my main hangout guy probably.
What about you, George?
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember his last name. I've got a couple that are floating in my head, but I don't think either one of them are right. But his first name was Gene, and he lived almost directly across the street, just one house to the left of my house as I exited the front door. Mm. We didn't go to the same school together. We didn't even do the same activities. Like, I was baseball, football, basketball, and he was, you know, hunting and fishing. But because we were that close to each other, and like I said, that little street, it was barely wide enough for one car to drive on at a time and only a few hundred yards long. So there wasn't anything to separate us. We were basically the same age. I think maybe I might have been a year older than him. His family was weird, but he was awesome. And we had so much fun. John, he was the kid that had all the Star Wars figures on the block.
Oh, you mentioned. Yeah. You talked about him. Yeah.
And I was the one that had the sports equipment and the Fisher-Price stuff. And then I got the Atari 2600. Yeah. So it was all that sharing of that stuff. Mm-hmm. That was what I really remember the most. And I had other friends on the blocks, and there were a couple of kids that lived a street away that were like the outcasts that we ridiculed to a degree, but Gene and I,
they probably did the same to you guys. So
they did. Sure.
Yeah.
We got a little more devious. We broke out their windows of their house one time, but
ooh, The statute of limitations is up. You're okay.
Yeah, you're fine.
It was rough, but we, I did really appreciate that friendship. John, who was your best friend?
I don't even have to think twice about it. DJ Ward lived across the street from me. Now, across the street from me, again, was across the gravel road, down a long driveway.
A mile and a half away. Yeah.
He lived in an underground house.
What?
Wow.
A bunker?
That's a whole story I won't get into. It was really revolutionary and experimental, but he lived in an underground house.
That's worth best friend status alone. Just
it was
that.
Pretty cool.
That's, yeah. That's different.
He was also the friend who owned Dark Tower. He was the friend who had a big track, and he was a guy who also had an Atari 2600. Later, he got an Atari computer. We had a parallel childhoods. We had a lot of the same things, and it was because of our proximity, because we'd go out, we'd play together, we were at school together. We were the same guy. So, yeah. So between Gene and Ronnie and DJ, if any of you guys are listening, write in and let us know you found the show. So in this segment, now that we've remembered our playing buddies, we want to talk about the things we were building up to. And you've referenced it many times, George, how parenting today has changed that sense of independence that we got as kids.
Yeah, I think it's a completely different environment. And we often, when we do these backtracks, we kind of try and set them up like, all right, here's the history of the thing. Here's some stuff that happened about the thing. Here's some influential people of the thing. And here's how it's different today. And that's usually where we like to go. In this case, it has a huge impact on our lives, how things are different parenting wise today compared to when we were growing up. Here's what I remember.
Okay.
My parents had their own lives. My father had his grocery store and his buddies at the bar and his pool hall stuff. And my mother had her work and taking care of the house and her work friends and stuff like that. But as I grew up, as society norms changed, as news media got out there and proliferated all this fear-mongering stuff that happened, because as we said, statistically, we think that probably the bad things that were happening as we grew older were happening when we were kids. We just didn't know about it. I was told by society that my kids needed to be my life. Instead of having my own life as an adult, I was told your kids are number one. They're the thing you have to focus on. You have to sacrifice everything for your kids, give up everything. I'm older now and all my kids have moved out of the house, and I'm going to call bullshit on that fucking theory. Because what I have seen with my children, with this constant making them the focus of everything while they were growing up, is the spoilage that has happened in that generation compared to ours and the ones before us is vast. It's huge. These children, while brilliant and intelligent and socially aware, have a really difficult time operating independently at the ages when they're supposed to be moving out of the damn house. And I think it's our fault.
Well, yeah,
it's definitely our fault. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you talked, George, about that experience that your parents had their own lives. And I'd really never thought about it in that way. But it's true of my parents as well. And you can ring in and how you felt, Mo. What made me think, immediately wanted to ask you this, George, was as a kid in that environment, did you feel neglected?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. Not even one little bit.
I didn't either.
No, I mean, I knew where my parents were because I knew who they were as people. So I knew my father was at the grocery store, at the pool hall, or at the bar. I knew that's where he was.
Maybe at home once in a while.
Maybe at home once in a while. When he got tired.
Right. Yeah.
I knew my mother was dropping me off for school, at work, picking me up after my activities, and then at home. I knew where everything was, and so I didn't have any fear about it not supporting me because it always had. Just not in the way that society told me I needed to support my children after I became a parent. And I'm not saying that we should not love our children. Of course we should.
No.
But I think we are doing a huge disservice to their independence by constantly coddling them and taking away their ability to thrive and learn in that independence. When the truth of the matter is, while yes, there's new technology and kids are getting smarter younger and they have cars and cell phones and blah, 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 at much different ages than we might have had, they're not developing as adults nearly as fast as we were. And I don't know if that's a bad thing, but it feels like a bad thing.
I think it is.
Getting ready for this show, I was doing a little research and this stuff, and I found this whole thing where, like, some parents who are doing just what you said, like giving kids some freedom, were actually getting, like, chastised or looked down by other parents. Like, I found a case where a parent had a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old, and he let them, the 10-year-old walked them back home by themselves from the park.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't very far. Mm-hmm. Child services got called. Because a parent, somebody saw two
kids
walking
hung up
on the street.
Them. Jeez.
I mean, no, it went to the house, actually, apparently.
Oh.
Because parents saw these two kids walking on the street unsupervised. And I'm like, shit, I was unsupervised most of the time. And I see where you're going with that, George, because it does, like, my parents, both my parents had their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
But I never doubted that they loved me.
No.
I never had a, there was never a doubt in my mind. And I also had never had a doubt that I was important to them. But they had their own thing, you know, and they had things that I wasn't, you know, like, my dad's like, oh, it's really none of your business. That's my life. You know, I mean,
none of your business.
Yeah. Right.
There's nothing wrong with hearing that. Okay. Yeah. Now I know some things aren't my business.
Yeah. Because you're a child. No. And I think that was, I feel like I came out better for that experience, actually.
You know, my wife used to be a big fan of Dr. Phil, and periodically I'd walk through the living room when she was watching. And I remember there was a whole episode about this mother in Manhattan who let her daughter at 6-7 years old ride the subway by herself. Yeah. And that was the topic of a show.
Yeah.
In 2010 or something, right?
Yeah.
So now I never had a subway. I didn't grow up in Manhattan, but can you imagine, like, can you believe someone let little John run out in the woods, find sticks that fell over, stay all day out with no supervision? That was just normal. And
right.
I remember seeing that show thinking, I mean, it's Manhattan, but it's not that big of a deal. It's not like constantly dangerous. It's just use your brain. And her point was, I'm actually teaching her independence now, so she's not so reliant on me.
Yeah.
I think for me too, there's another part of the point that I was making. The child gets coddled too much and therefore doesn't develop independent thought, problem solving, the confidence they need to go out into the world to stake their own claim. But there's another thing that's happened to our generation that we let society do to us. I haven't had a life for 20 or 30 goddamn years at this point. It's been their life and I've been servicing their life. So while I've had some fun things to do here and there, you know, we did this YouTube and podcast and stuff. That wasn't until much later in their lives when they were more independent. From the time that the youngest one was born until the time that he moved out, that 18 years or so, I didn't get to really plan just stuff for me. Me and my wife, even, we talk about it all the time. We went on no vacations that were just the two of us.
No.
Every vacation, you had to take those children with you because society told you you did. They expected it. You had already kept them tied to your apron strings, as you talked about earlier, John. You didn't have a choice. We just went on our 21st wedding anniversary trip this past weekend.
Right.
You know what my child said when I got back? Y'all went to Orlando without me? Hell yeah, I went to Orlando without you, you little bastard. I've been covering your ass for 20 years. Get away from me.
Yeah. You're welcome to go by yourself.
Damn right.
That's right. You have a car that I gave you
with gas
that I bought. Get in the car and go to Orlando. Why are we stopping you?
And as soon as I told him, you go to Orlando anytime you want. You know what he said? I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
That's my fault.
We have nobody to blame but ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, we always make fun of and poke fun at, talk about, criticize, you know, oh, helicopter parenting is the worst thing ever. Honestly, we were the helicopter parents.
Mm-hmm.
We were the ones that raised Gen Z, Gen Millennials or whatever they are, whatever you call them, based on our ages, right? But why was that? I don't know for sure. Was that a rebound? Did enough parents believe that, oh, we were too neglectful and we should have done more? I think it's whatever it was, it's an overreaction.
It was entirely Ted Turner's fault. Fuck that guy.
I mean, maybe our parents were a little too laissez-faire and didn't pay enough attention. I don't think that was the case for me, but I could see where some parents, you know, kids might have thought that coming out of there. But we went way too far the other way and just smothered them. And it's created a generation of people that don't know how to take themselves to Orlando, right?
Yeah,
Or buy a house or start a bank account or anything without saying, Mom, Dad, how do I do X? And it's our fault. It's unfortunate.
Well, it's also, I think technology does play a little bit into that because we really didn't have a way of being in constant, easy communication. Yeah, we had payphones and stuff. But you look at today where, like, you know, I heard stories of, like, you know, someone's daughter would go to a store to pick out clothes and she had to call her mom and show her pictures of it, which you couldn't do that.
What size am I?
Oh, God. All the damn time with that thing.
What size shoes do I wear? Well, they're your feet.
Put something on. If it falls off, it's too big. If you can't breathe, it's too small. Figure it out. Jesus.
And so if my parents had that access, maybe it would have went down a similar road? Maybe, I don't know. Because again, the fact that we're parents and we care about our children and we have a way of knowing where they are all the time and being in communication with them.
It's hard to not take advantage of that.
Exactly.
Right?
It's tough.
Think we got sold a bill of goods by an overreacting society to tell us that our parents didn't do a good job. And so we needed to do better. And that's where your Dr. Phil TV shows and all of that kind of stuff comes into play. The fact of the matter is a large population survived their Gen X childhood. So I don't think our parents did that horrible of a damn job raising us.
With all our limbs.
And the ones who did and died, that's natural selection. Fuck those guys. They don't need to be in the gene pool.
Ouch.
I'm just saying.
Well, luckily, none of those kids who died are listening right now, so you won't get emails.
This is true. This is true.
That's cruel.
Oh, we're going to get letters on that one.
The views and opinions expressed on the podcast are necessarily those. Before we get out of this, what has been fascinating discussion of, you know, kind of our Gen X childhood, focusing specifically on how it was different, I think we can all agree that the way we were raised and the environment we were, I mean, our parents and we were a factor of the environment and the time we grew up in. It couldn't have happened any other time. It's changed so much now. But looking back on what I would argue was a great time to be a kid, what is your most memorable childhood memory of having that great independence? Is there a specific kind of story or an incident or a thing you were able to do? And I don't mind. I'll get us started. I usually throw to somebody else and so I can think, but I have one. I can start right now.
Okay.
And it's very clear for me in my memory, I had a casual friend that was just the son of one of my mom's work friends that we saw occasionally. And he lived in town. And we lived out in the woods, right? And that was a distance of about 6 miles. And he would come to my house and play, and somebody would drive me to their house and play. But once they were at my house, and we were like, we want to go out and ride bikes, and it was time to go home. And we said, wait, we have a proposition. What if you just go home? And when we're done playing, we will ride our bikes all the way back in town, that 6 miles, and then he'll be home and my mom will pick me up later. And they said, okay. And that trip, it wasn't hugely memorable. It was largely boring. I mean, riding your bike 6 miles took an hour or two. I forget how long it took, how long it was. I hurt myself. I have a scar on the back of my heel where one of those like huffy bike pedals that hold
the
on
sharp your tooth pedals.
Yeah. It spun around and caught me in the back, like the Achilles tendon in the back of my ankle. When I got there, my entire sock was pink. I'm like, why? I wore one pink sock. Oh no, that's blood in my shoe. But I remember I felt like, oh my God, I'm all by myself on a road. And I remember it's County Road 547, right down through the middle of Central Florida. Never forget when I drive that road today, if I'm back home, I remember that bike ride because they said, yep, you're mature enough to do that on your own. We'll see you on the other side. So awesome.
That's
George,
cool.
What about you? You remember?
I remember a lot of the childhood. Most memorable childhood independent moment got me in trouble. So
that's good.
Okay.
That's
good.
That sounds like a good story.
Let's go.
Right? So I'm not going to talk about the one where we broke out the ratty kid neighbor house thing. That was a whole different story. And I could go 15 minutes on that. But there was a time when we were on a road and I had been given a bow and arrow for some reason. I don't know why.
Oh, God. Okay, maybe I don't want to hear this.
Nobody got injured.
All right. I'm better now.
Yeah, we were shooting I think we had like 3 arrows with a bow. So you shoot them and you have to go pick them up, right? So we were shooting them up and down that length of that 200 or so yard road that I talked about earlier.
Okay. Yeah.
And as you can imagine, this is a very narrow road that's lined on both sides by duplexes who have driveways that reach the road directly, you know, because people have to back out of their driveway and go on the road and go their way. Well, at one point we were down at the end of the road. My duplex house was near the front of the road and I shot an arrow, you know, just trying to do one of those like Braveheart arrow shots where you shoot it up in the sky and see how far it can go kind of thing.
Yeah.
It hit the back quarter panel of my mother's brand new car.
Oh,
it didn't stick in it, but it left one of those BB sized dents.
Oh yeah.
Those dings.
Right? Yeah. That there's no way to get that out. Cause it's that sharp little ding and everything.
Yep.
So what did we do as kids? Immediately we hid the bow and arrow
Absolutely.
On the side of the house.
I don't blame bow and arrow. Never yeah. seen it.
What's a bow and arrow?
And went and did some other activity while we're nervously looking back the whole time. My mother and father didn't notice it for a week.
Okay.
Then finally, one day, my mother is getting some groceries out of the trunk of the car, and she looks over as she's going toward the house. Donald! That's my father's name. Donald! There's something wrong with my car! He comes outside, you know, half groggy from work and everything. What? What are you? Look! There's a big dent, you know, in that quarter panel. Uh-huh. He didn't say a word. All he did was just look at me.
He knew it was you. Automatically.
He said, bow and arrow, wasn't it?
Oh. Oh my goodness. He called it too.
He called it. I got a good little whooping. It was one of the last whoopings I got, but I got a good strong whooping on that one. And the whole time, if you'd have just told us. I'm like, no. I just got the whooping yeah. earlier.
That's all. Right. I'd have got the whooping last week yeah. instead.
Yeah.
That's shenanigans on that. That was not the right.
You know, I had a week reprieve. Are you kidding?
Right?
And more time on the outside.
Yeah.
How about you, Mo? Do you have one that sticks in your memory? The feeling of independence?
Yeah. I was a third grade, and one of our neighbors, upstairs neighbors, they had a daughter who was older. She was like a teenager. And she would walk past, pick me from school. And when I got out, and we'd walk to the bus stop, take the bus home. You know, my mom gave her like a few bucks a week to do that, gotcha. You know. Yep. And so I'm sitting there waiting out for in school, waiting, and everybody's gone and she's not there. So I'm like, oh crap, I'm the only one here.
Oh.
So I was like, I guess I'll go home. So I walked down to 14th Street, got on the M14 bus, went home. My mom's like, I forget the girl's name, but she says, no, where's so-and-so? And I said, I don't know, she didn't show up. She's like, how'd you get home? I was like, I just took the bus. She was like, oh my God. And she was so proud of me because she said,
right, proud.
I'm not using her ever again. Yeah. I can save money.
Right. You did all proud. The things that the babysitter would have done for you, exactly. But you did it on your own. Yeah.
She wasn't terrified or mad at you. She was proud of you. That's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. She was very proud. She's like, oh, she's like so proud. And she's like, yeah, now I don't have to pay the babysitter anymore. which is probably the part she liked the best.
Can you increase my allowance? Since you don't have to right, be please, babysitter anymore.
Right. Look at the money I've saved you.
It was like one of those moments where I felt like, wow, I feel kind of proud of myself.
You know? I can do things.
I did an adult thing. I was able to come home by myself. So I still
something
remember
up until then you thought the babysitter needed to be there for, and you were able to step
by myself.
Up
was not
take care of it.
Yeah. Yep.
They're great. Okay. Guys, what a great time. Just looking back, both just personal memories and then kind of like what was going on in the world and how it impacted our childhood. I wouldn't trade my Gen X childhood for anything.
Oh, no,
I think it was one of the greatest times to grow up ever. And it's sadly, we didn't know it at the time, but it was the last time anybody would grow up like that. Can't unring that technology bell or the Ted Turner bell, George. That's not going anywhere. So thanks so much for sharing that with me. Before we wrap up this show, though, I want to take a real quick moment to thank a brand new Patreon supporter.
Oh.
Yeah, Bart A. joined us, and he rocketed straight up to that $10
Whoa.
Level.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah,
holy cow.
Another financial commitment who Bart loves what we do. He wants to support it, make sure we keep doing it, and he put his money where his mouth was. Thank you so much, Bart, and to you and everyone who supports us, whether it's on Patreon or over on YouTube. We so, so much appreciate you, and it absolutely keeps gas in the tank and keeps us motivated to do what we do. We will, of course, be back in 2 weeks with another Backtrack, but next week is the regular edition of our show. Until then, I'm John. George, thank you so much for being here, man.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you.
Always fun, man.
Fourth listener, it's you we all appreciate most of all, though, and we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washing shirts till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, not my best work, but fuck it.
Yeah, it works.
It's the promo.
It's the promo.
All right, I misread what you were doing. I thought I picked up on what you're putting down. So
happy accidents, right?
Yeah, it works. Exactly. It might be a new thing we do. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, hey, podcast listener, my name is Vince, and I'm the host of a show called The RR Show. It stands for Reddit Readings. We're going to sit down twice a week, and I'm going to bring you the most entertaining stories from all of the best subreddits that exist online. Things like malicious compliance, petty revenge, hey, lady, I don't work here. Oh, there's so much more. Lots of great stories and things you won't believe. Like the one time this dude was caught in a bathroom with his friend and he was slapping them because that was the only way that he could actually legitimately help them. A mall cop comes in with a taser. Oh, yeah, the rest is history. It's going to be fun.
There is, I don't know, I got like 20 seconds left, so I don't got much more time to tell you another story. But just join me on The RR Show. It's from Evergreen Podcast, produced in partnership with Wessler Media. So The RR Show, wherever you get podcasts, subscribe today. And it's like an adult story time. Let's hang out together. The RR Show. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts.